Tamari.
Tamira.
Tamira.
Tarima.
Tarima. Calamari. Oh, shit. No.
Tamarind. Captain's Pod, Stardate 24-19-16.4. Except it's 0.5, not 0.4. Apologies. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us on our continuing voyages through the final frontier. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she desires considerable less cheerfulness in her final moments. It's Ambassador Danae.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
I mean, oh, I'm sorry. Fewer cheerful moments than me being cheerful doesn't really sell
yeah,
me.
Yeah, no, just actually, said. I'm the one that needs fewer cheerful moments. This is the most out of whack I felt recording an episode, because this was supposed to be two episodes in one.
Yeah.
We went, our full recording session was 4 hours
long.
For episode one.
I'm a little worried.
I still don't know what length that podcast will be, because I haven't finished editing it yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is real-time talk.
Yeah. But we have to get this recorded, and we want to get it recorded pretty fresh, so... Before I even know what episode one is going to finally sound like, we're going to watch episode two, record a podcast about it.
As God intended.
Ambassador, last time on Starfleet Academy, we got all of the setup. We've introduced to our crew. We got introduced to a villain. This week is episode two. The title is Beta Test. What do you think is going to happen? Do you think there's a chance that it's going to live up to your expectations now that you love episode one so much?
Let me just say this right off the bat. The first thing that I'm thinking of is, you said we found out about like one villain. I think we're going to have two villains, and I think the second villain is going to be his mother, and that at some point in time, as his journey through Starfleet has revealed to him that his destiny, his choice, his preference is to be Starfleet, and he will have to go toe-to-toe with moms.
With moms, plural?
I mean, I was just saying, like, that's her nickname, you know, like moms.
Oh, what's really amazing is that Tatiana Maslany is famous for Orphan Black, where she plays, and I apologize if clone isn't the right word, clones, multiple clones of the same person. Multiple of them are mothers. And like one of them is like a soccer mom. One of them is like a bit gothy. One of them is like a nerd. There's another like regular mom. So she has form for playing multitudinal characters as well.
Yeah, I'm just saying that they're kind of burying why she hasn't shown up in episode one.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's some sort of emotional torture over later.
Yeah, oh, no, absolutely. Yeah.
Because I think that they're going to want Captain Kitty to be like the motherly figure. And you can't.
The kind of replacement mum?
Yeah, because they're not going to let mom kill Captain Kitty.
Are you sure? Holly Hunter's pretty expensive. This is genuinely one of like my predictions is that I think Holly Hunter and Paul Giamatti die somehow in this season because they are expensive people. It's the Sean Bean school of introducing famous actors in season one and then killing them in the finale.
Oh, that's really interesting. I guess we're going to find out. I don't know that all that's going to happen in episode two anyway, so let's get into episode two.
Yeah.
Beta Test. I really feel like when we were discussing the episode titles and Beta Test came up and I thought of the Kobakubushika Maru,
That's my favorite cocktail.
I think it's going to be something like that. And we kind of got a little glint, a little hint, little look into these sort of simulation modules in episode one when they ran the, just pretending the warp core breach is going to be happening. So I think that Beta Test is going to be something where it's like the B team is going to be tested in some sort of, because here's the thing. Episode one, action. And it was real action.
So much, yeah.
The rest of it is going to be training action. So it's going to feel a bit like holodeck after holodeck. And that's going to be boring unless they find some unique way to kind of bring us back in.
Or it's going to be a new version of the Enterprise being the only ship in range cliche. Because it's like, why is this always happening to the cadets? Because like, you should be training right now. How do you end up in actual emergencies every single episode? My theory is that Beta Test refers to some new specific program that they're launching and trialing. I mean, to be honest, this entire class is a beta test for what the Academy will become. So it might just be a wider metaphor.
Yeah, let's think of something specific that's going to happen.
I think a Ferengi will appear. pure-blooded, straight Ferengi.
Now, just as a reminder to any new listeners, like, we are an R-rated show. I just want to say that before I make this prediction.
Where are you going?
Well, you know how that one guy like morphed himself?
The shapeshifter.
What if there's like a crude joke? Like, is that can you morph everything? Like, oh, that kind happened. Of a joke.
Oh, but you think they're gonna make that joke?
Like, I just wonder. I wonder what kind of show we're watching. Like, are they gonna make those kind of remarks back and forth? They're already calling each other asshole one, asshole two. Yeah. Are we gonna get dick jokes? I don't know.
But we do know they won't go so far as a full MF-er. Just went mother.
Yeah. We're still trying to appeal to the nebulousness of the PG-13 audience.
But whatever streaming means in that vein.
Yeah, so I don't know if I can predict that, but is someone going to die this episode? No. Yes, let's kill them all.
No.
Start over again.
Oh, another thing I predict is more opera from the Doctor. I want a quick win.
We're probably going to have singing, right? We're going to have more singing.
Yeah, he's going to flex some singing.
But I think it's going to be Happy. I think Happy's going to surprise us with her voice.
Well, she can just program herself with a voice.
But I'm saying that the actor that's playing this part, you know, probably has a really
sneaky, incredible
beautiful
voice.
Skill, and we're gonna see that on display.
Love that. Did you want to do any season predictions before we dive in?
Well, that was kind of my mom prediction. I think that's the one that's stuck with me, is I wonder how they're going to emotionally torture this poor Caleb kid.
Yeah, that's fair. I like that.
And having, like, dangling the mom carrot only to discover that she's actually, like, gone full evil or something.
Yeah,
you know?
She might be too far gone. Because can you imagine, like, losing a mum is rough. Imagine losing a son for 15 years, a child for 15 years. Like, I don't think you come back from that.
And you're doing time.
Yeah. And you've just escaped with the pirate who was responsible for getting you there in the first place. But,
and out somehow.
And out. Yeah.
And then why isn't she communicating? That's maybe like a question. Because really, seasonally, we don't really have a lot of clues as to what we're like really.
No, which I kind of love. I like that I don't have a lot of predictions, because it means they haven't been dangling mystery boxes in front of us.
There's probably going to be the will they, won't they vibe going on. But again, I really hope that.
Sam and the Doctor?
It's weird because she's a 17-year-old program and a 500-year-old program. And that just felt strange. And then I'm like, well, they're photonics.
It's different for photonics. Perhaps.
And then I thought about photonic sex, thank you, which is basically just what happens when you get two projectors in a room and you project them onto the wall at the same time.
Well, the Doctor has had a family in the past, but Ambassador, we're not here to talk about that episode of Voyager.
Okay. Yeah. We do have a problem of making our own episodes up a
we
little
do.
Bit
you,
too much.
You have just not, you've retroactively predicted an episode that's already been made.
Sorry about that.
Whoops. Let's head over to the holodeck to watch the episode, and then we'll head over to the atrium for a full debrief. Two to beam out. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the Replicator or the Replicafe and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched together. Most important question first, Ambassador, would you like a mug replicated and then regular coffee poured into it?
Yes.
Or would you like something else?
That's the only thing that I want.
It's the only thing that you want.
Yeah, I don't want replicated espresso. I don't want like an espresso that has had some sort of special scientific magic put into the beans.
No.
Some sort of dialed into my DNA caffeine jolt.
Oh, it's going to hit your metabolism perfectly.
Yeah, I don't want that. I just want
a replicated mug.
And then I want, you know, what I would hope this far in the future would be a perfectly pulled espresso shot.
I mean,
how many bad espresso shots have you had in your life?
I've not had many espresso shots.
Well, I mean,
I really haven't.
Well, you've had like lattes that have had espresso in them.
Yeah, I've had plenty of bad coffee. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what makes it bad is the beans and a terrible pull.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to wonder.
I've had so many. It can't be that bad in the future. That far in the future, it cannot be that bad.
But who was operating it?
Somebody.
It was like nobody was pulling it or pressing the button. It just, the mug appeared and then it started.
Yeah.
There's real mysteries of Star Trek right here. Yeah.
And that's really all you need to know about this episode.
Well, that's it. And I would like a Ractogino, which is a Klingon coffee. Or Klingon equivalent. Imagine what that tastes like.
Just iron.
It's just blood. That would track, because you have Rokegg blood pie, which we heard about the other week. Uh-huh. There is blood wine.
Yep.
And they like prune juice.
Yeah.
So it all adds up.
Yeah. It all adds up.
Give us a synopsis.
Yeah. Okay. So episode 2 is essentially a little bit of what you can expect out of, I think, Starfleet Academy in general.
Yeah.
We have left the ship behind and we are fully entering into an academy show where we're seeing what a day in the life of a student is like with a mass amount of interruption of other shit going on. Oh, I can tell already you didn't like this one.
Yeah, you're wincing, man.
Like you're doing the thing where you have your fingers squeezed at the bridge of your nose, like you're trying to just hold it all together.
This is gonna be hard. This is like, it's like your dog that you love does a shit somewhere. I still love the dog.
Yeah.
Don't like what it just did.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to talk about it with you.
Me too. That's my gut instinct. It's not shit. That's extreme. It's not. It's really, really not.
Also, in this episode, we learn that the place where his mother went has been hidden from him on Star Charts because it's been hiding behind a massive, essentially, wall. This impenetrable wall.
Psionic barrier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where that protected the planet Beta Z, which for new Star Trek people, that's a fun place to talk about. We'll talk about Beta Z. And when the burn happened, Beta Z kind of walled itself away for protection, was rejected by Starfleet. This is information that's news to me. Is it news to you?
No, it's not.
That's part of the other show.
That was part of Discovery. Okay. Yeah, they explained that, yeah.
And so this is, in this episode, we're trying to kind of mend the bridge between the Beta Z community and Starfleet and the sort of restart of Starfleet and like
what the future,
yes, yeah. The Federation, and what the future could be based on the sins of the past. So it's doing a lot of legwork to kind of bring back in a species that's pretty valuable for the brand.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, Beta Zoids are a big deal for the brand. Yeah,
and for our character Caleb, the where he was really interested in to find out more about where his mom is, etc. It was kind of like in an area that Starfleet and the Federation couldn't see because of the psionic wall, and due to the appearance of the Beta Z
Tamira.
Like the council, the people who are coming, like.
The delegation. Yeah, the delegation from Beta Z.
Some of the younglings that came along in that crew, talking with Caleb, revealed more information about this very, very important place to Caleb. So, like for the characters that we met in the first episode, we've got some interesting kind of like news now.
Immediate thoughts and feelings, Ambassador, off the high of episode one. Did you like what they did with this episode? That feels. It could well be more the norm for the series.
So there's a couple of things I don't like, and there's quite a bit that I do like. Yes, I like this episode.
Great, nice.
But what I didn't like about the episode is that it's doing a lot. Like, it did so much that I kind of couldn't sink into a place. Like, last episode, we did a lot, but there was, like, action that was sort of carrying the momentum. In an episode where we're sitting inside of the Federation, or the school, the academy, there's still a lot kind of going on, and I needed it to kind of like simplify maybe a little bit. And here, this is where I'm going to sound like the old grumpy woman, right?
What do you think I'm going to sound like?
I don't know. But it was the banter back and forth between everybody was, it never really like kind of like had a breathing moment. It was just but like it was a lot for me personally. Yeah, it felt a little bit scripted.
That's pretty key. Like, yes, we know it is scripted.
Well,
it didn't feel organic.
No, I thought some of what I was saying felt very organic. I was really enjoying some of the acting and some of the scenes here that like really worked for me.
Nice.
But some of it did feel, you know, like the start of a show, like people still trying to figure out sort of their character or how they're going to interact. And we definitely got to see grumpy Caleb in this episode. We talked about it last episode where we kind of were enjoying that he was, you know, like relaxing in a little bit, but we knew that he couldn't remain that way for long, and he doesn't. In this episode, he kind of really kicks into that. But I don't know, some of the dialogue to me, I needed to have the closed caption on. And I don't know if it was because our sound bar was really like
bassy.
Maybe it was bassy. Maybe there was a lot of background noise. There's a lot of sound design, and it buried what they were saying. And because things were so fast paced, I think I was kind of missing some stuff.
Yeah. This isn't just you. This is sound in general in modern movies and modern TV shows, because there isn't as much emphasis on enunciating and projecting, because they have personal mics and they mm-hmm. have booms everywhere and they can do ADR after the fact. So there's not always this appreciation for the people at home. And there's so much other stuff. There is layers and layers and layers and layers of audio, like you said. There's the humming in the background. There's the music. There's really the background crowd. But this happens a lot. Like, this is why I have to have subtitles on almost everything. Mm. Dialogue gets lost so easily in modern TV shows.
And I think because I'm really invested here at episode two, like, yeah. I want to absorb everything.
And they're saying a lot of alien words as well.
Exactly. That was my next point is, on top of the richness of what's on the screen and the layers that they're showing in the new uniforms and this new space, that I'm just trying to kind of orient myself a little bit. Whereas last episode, I kind of felt like I didn't need to get oriented too much. This one, I was really trying to figure out where I belong in the story, if that makes sense. And because Caleb is a whiny bitch, I'm just kind of like, oh, I don't really want to, I don't want to spend a lot of time with this guy, but I kind of know he's kind of growing on me like a little bit by the end.
He almost grew too much in last episode. This is almost had like a one episode memory thing for character development. It's almost like they went too far with his advancement last episode and they needed to backpedal a bit.
Maybe.
I did not enjoy him at all this episode.
I did. I definitely enjoyed every single person that I saw. There was not one character that really, really, like, Caleb is annoying because he's young and he's got a lot of, like, he's a complex character and they're playing with all of his emotions. Mm-hmm. And that's annoying because I'm an old woman now. I don't want to be around someone like that for very long.
Yeah.
But I kind of like that they're playing around with the diversity of a person. You know, back in my day, if you were this guy, that was just your only character trait for the whole of it. You know, like, you're just the town idiot and that's what you are. And that's the only, but there's a lot of diversity in these characters. And yeah, but in this particular episode, it was a lot. There was a lot to digest. So I felt like I missed a lot.
Yeah. I don't know that you missed as much as you think you did.
Yeah. Okay.
I really don't. Because I don't think it was saying very much at all.
Well, let's dive into it because I think we might disagree on some things, and that's exciting.
I'm looking forward to it, actually, because we're not often this.
Yeah. Last episode, we were just
ends of the spectrum.
We were just oozing love last episode. And, yeah. And now we get to share some back and forth.
I'm so really glad we're doing this as separate episodes as well, because this, I would have either had like five things to say about this episode and it would have felt really tacked on.
Yeah.
I'm glad last week was just a big old love fest. And there was absolutely stuff I liked in this episode, but overall it missed the mark for me. But let's start at the top, Ambassador.
It's the fall semester.
It's the fall semester in big old text. And we have a bit more Chancellor Nala narration welcoming the students in. And that if you want to serve the galaxy, make your bed and get to class on time. And most importantly, my prediction immediately comes true. And we see a Ferengi in the front row.
Mm-hmm.
Although I see some extra bits. Those weren't like straight up Ferengi ears.
Mm.
And there is a Ferengi in Discovery season 3 or 4. I can't remember. And they look a bit different as well. So maybe this is just an evolved Ferengi they've just adapted, or I don't know what it is, but there was
God
definitely
forbid
a Ferengi.
Their earlobes are different.
We can't touch the earlobes. They should be smooth and they should be big. But the cold open before we get to the actual show credits is a kind of orientation again into the actual classes of Academy. The Doctor gets to have his little introductory mucus session. We get a Vulcan doing some lessons. Did the opening work for you? Do those little, what do you call them? Not dioramas, vignettes.
Yeah, I love it. The only thing that I'm upset about is that I'm not going to that school.
This was my favorite bit of the episode.
I think it's so fun to break.
I want this. I want them in lessons. I actually do want Harry Potter in Star Trek.
And this is, this is going to be every writer listening to our podcast that writes Star Trek, and we know every single writer loves our show so much and they all tune in. They will roll their eyes when I say this, because I know why we have the Beta Zed storyline.
Yes.
But all I wanted was just to stay in that classroom
really
longer than 45 seconds.
I want to know the Vulcan professor. I want to see the Doctor teach. I want to see all of the kooky professors. And I realized I want a Starfleet school for science and biochemistry.
It's so fun.
It's so fun.
And when I was in school, I had a class, and I think this is fairly normal. Maybe I'm really curious if you had to do something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when I was in school, we had to carry around flower bags that were dressed as babies.
Oh no, we were never alive. No, we were never made to do that.
Okay,
they knew better than that in England.
And then when we got a little further into school, they had just come up with the electric baby.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And this thing had a little computer system in, and at certain times it would just start crying, and you had to bop it gently. It would
twist it.
Not that toy.
Wait, what? No, we have those.
People would be like in the movies and you have to take them with you.
Out. No, you do not. Yes.
And the whole thing was you had to care for this baby so that you would learn, don't have sex, don't have babies. It's a pain in the ass. You don't want to do it.
No, it's a nightmare.
And that's the whole thing. And if if your flower bag broke, then you would get a new flower bag.
Yeah, got it.
So when they have this goop kind of containment field that they have to care for, I was like, what you're doing. You know, they're basically saying this slime thing is something that you...
The mucus.
They have to care for it for 5 days. Yeah. This mucus, this self-replicating mucus. And then the whole joke with the doctor about...
It was great. I loved
how
it.
What's a failing grade?
Die.
What a question to ask. Why not? What's a passing grade?
Well, no. The reason is that he said that if you break the mold and you merge with it, you have to have a hologram will turn up and will have to separate you from the mold, and then you get a C. So Sam was expecting that to be a fail. And she's like, well, if that's the C grade, how do you fail? Yeah. And he's like, you die.
I was like, well, I guess a passing grade is that it stays in the container the whole time.
It stays in the container the entire time.
But it's just that mundane thing that feels like exactly what you had happen in school.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
It felt really real to me. And then... just the sassy behavior, who was talking about, like, in our society, we don't send the men with the hormones out to figure their shit out. And that felt really fun.
That felt great. His delivery was fantastic. I like all of that. I was so happy and smiling. I was like, man, maybe they're really going to do something.
Too fast, but I really did it. I had a great time. I also like that we got to see more of the uniform in this series of vignettes, because we kind of... sort of back and forth in between all of these vignettes. There's a speech that's kind of going on, and then there's the shot of them from the side where it has the delta on the side of their uniform. It looks so nice. I really love that.
And some of the teachers have like a shiny band across their uniform.
But what we're doing is we're seeing this sort of modern video editing where we have to see fast, 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 so that if you cut off a little bit of it and you share it on social media, you don't have to do a bunch of editing because it's already cutting between so many things. And I just wanted to sit in those moments a little bit more.
Yeah,
but
it's
the second episode.
It will happen.
It's the first time we're seeing them in the academy, and they're just trying to kind of show you, hey, before you flip away on the channel, like, look at all of the things that are kind of going on.
I don't know how much you're doing that in streaming world, though, because you're not, like, flicking between channels.
I was just thinking about that as I said it. I just don't know that that's the modern day viewer.
Right,
you know, they kind of need to try. I understand that we're speeding up what we're seeing and we're having brain rot because of it. So let's use our science to our advantage and know that this is a terrible way to consume media and just slow it down a little bit. Let me have a little bit of fun in there.
My overall problem with the episode. We're actually sitting for too long in the wrong moments.
Yeah, but we're both nerding out.
Yeah.
It also really quickly introduces the first class to return in 100 years. They're going to be sharing with the War College.
Love this. So this to me is a really, really interesting addition. Because basically, so the War College actually feels a little bit more established.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there was like the Earth Defense Force. Basically, Starfleet wasn't gone. And there was like an Earth element of Starfleet that was really like seclusionist and was way
survival.
More militant and survival. So I feel like this is the remnants of that. That like they are immediately
the militia.
Still preparing for a new burn. They're still resource hoarding. If there's going to be like an old footprint of Starfleet post burn, it's going to be this War College. So that for me was like a really interesting extra dimension. And the guy that's leaving that, Commander Kelvrick, is an interesting antagonist for me, because instead of having, and this is me just like extrapolating way down the line, one of the problems Starfleet and Star Trek has, especially in TNG, Voyager, and Deep Space Nine, is the evil admiral, evil captain cliche. It's hard for Starfleet to keep these ideals when you need an antagonist. So you'll always end up with the sketchy captain that's doing something they shouldn't because the Romulans are going to invade and you've got to take action. Or you've got the corrupt admiral and there's like a conspiracy and we've got to take them down. Making them in the War College, and I'm not saying they're corrupt, but having a War College that's more about the military allows Starfleet to be more about exploration.
And diplomacy.
And then when things get serious, you can have this debate with the war footing, War College side, whatever the Starfleet equivalent of that would be. It allows Starfleet to not be a military organization. And like I said, that's a lot of extrapolating from me, but I see a place for that War College in this future that's really, really interesting.
I think it kind of honors the idea of the burn as well. Like, you can't just start up Starfleet Academy and be like, let's just pretend that nothing happened and we're just going to start over without having the influence of reality. And I think this episode did a good job of reminding the audience or introducing the audience to the severity of the burn. Because even if you don't know anything about Beta Zed, you don't know anything about this wall, which I know a little bit about Beta Zed, but I don't know anything about the wall. I know nothing about the burn. So I was able to kind of piece together this narrative that they're advancing and honoring, and like, we're trying to erase the past, but we really can't do that because it would be a disservice to what we created in the Star Trek world when we did this in Discovery. So I think that's kind of cool too. I also like that the idea of this like militant guy that's leading the War College.
Yeah, Kelrick.
He didn't seem like the mustache twirly guy.
No, he
just seemed like a guy.
He didn't seem like a warmonger. Yeah. And when Vance says, when they get here, we're all one big happy family, okay, now that the decision is made.
Yeah.
And he did toe that line. He didn't undermine anyone. No. He actually did go along with it. And
which
there
I really
were like some
appreciated.
Nods and like, okay, I see the logic now.
Yeah, I think this episode was okay with Caleb being the bad guy and then trying to have kind of a redeemable moment. It was very evident that they were putting forward the idea that this kid doesn't give a shit and is trying to figure out how to make him care. Like, what is his path to care? Because at the end of this episode...
Did they find it? Did we find it?
I mean, I think a little bit. Because she removed his walls. Captain Kitty removes his walls by the end. You know, kind of realizing that... Which is interesting to do in episode two. Because he had 90 days where he had to be like...
Oh, yeah.
You know,
and then she comes
in
and is like,
and then, you know,
I'm
what?
Not going to bully
if you're
you
gonna
into staying
here.
Here
you're going to be here. And so I think he is kind of finding his way. And... cinematically through kind of like the lens of the cameraman, when Caleb at the end of the episode is walking through the hallway, he's a bit more relaxed, a bit more like kind of in his skin, and he makes eye contact with the people that he doesn't know their name.
Including Tig.
You know I'm saying? Like,
no, that was, it's a great point.
I think it's kind of that he's trying to find his way on his own, and perhaps his speech to the Beta Zed princess that we'll get to here in a second.
Yeah. Tarima.
His kind of like heart-centered speech to her at the end, it did feel like a bit forced and quick and very introspective from a character I didn't expect that from. But I also like diverse characters. So I don't know. I don't know if they're trying to push his story arc too fast or show us that he's very diverse. I'm not sure yet, but I think he is overall in this episode meant to be the quintessential bad guy.
Man, I don't know. I didn't get that from him. I got obnoxious and...
Yeah, he's a bad guy.
It doesn't mean that he's the bad guy. It just means that, like, he's the kid that thinks he knows everything because he's been out of the streets. So he's got the street smarts. But like Tig said, like, he's got Reno, sorry, is her character's name. You can have all the knowledge if you want, if you haven't got the wisdom. Mm-hmm. And like, I get it. It's fine. Cool. That's what you're doing with him. All of the stuff with the princess, I don't know that she's a princess actually, but
I'm
obviously Tarima did not work. It was ridiculous, eye rolly. It was backwards, completely backwards. But we'll get to that.
I was just thinking kind of more like, I didn't get bad guy vibes from the War College people.
No.
That kind of surprised me because it is a bit intimidating to see them like all dressed in black, standing there, kind of going, ooh, they've seen some shit. Like, they're there because someone's got to be the people that are going to pull the trigger.
I mean, and they're still ready for it. Like, mm-hmm. they are now. I just think it's really interesting that they're putting a line in the sand between them as well. Like,
in a way.
It feels like it's all been in Starfleet up until now.
But then the transitionary scene is our beloved...
Thok. Yeah, Cadet Master.
Cadet Master.
Yeah.
In the rain.
I love this
with
so,
our
I love
crew
this so much.
Just screaming about you will not live in fear, you know. She's
talking
about,
I will remove my stomach and choke on it before I let any of you like submit to your fears.
You will stare death in the face and she will stare back. Like, it's hysterical and I love it, but
so good.
That indicates that, yeah, I mean, they're there to learn about space goop and how to make a warp engine, do warpy stuff.
But they'll still have self-defense,
basically.
But
they're still going to have to learn how to, you know...
They're the ones on the front line.
Do combat.
There's an interesting comparison to... this is going to go on a tangent, but in Enterprise, there's this huge thing that happens in the season finale of season two, and it makes season three this one long adventure. And instead of just having Starfleet on board, they have another security team called the Makos, and they are deliberately militant, military. They are doing the serious stuff, and Captain Archer's a bit offended by that because he's like, we're still a ship of exploration. My team are still trained. They can do combat if needed. We don't need an explicit military force on board the ship. And I always thought that was interesting. Like, I love the idea of separating Starfleet from military. Yeah. So I like that Discovery Academy might be picking up on that a little bit. In the lineup you just mentioned with the Cadet Master, it was so distracting. There was a green-skinned person with bright orange hair, and I was like, that is such a choice. I haven't had a chance to look it up yet, but I'm 90% sure they're a representative of one of the aliens that Worf would kill on the holodeck. So he would have this training program that was just these gnarly-looking He-Man and the Masters of the Universe alien creatures, and I think that was one of them. And I just love that we're picking out some really obscure aliens and sliding them into Star Trek.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at all the people going, I bet this is another wink and a nod. This is another wink mm-hmm. and a nod. Like, what is Boopy Memorial Park?
Boothby Memorial Park.
Yeah, there's like, there was that.
Boothby.
And then there was like another one that was
Rock Tack.
Okay, well, I saw Rock Tack. And I don't know if it's the same Rock Tack
or
not.
No, it's not. It's that species.
I mean, that was an obvious. We both looked at each other with gaping, like we were
honestly,
just like, what?
My jaw hit the floor.
That was
because
so cool. It looked
so good.
They looked
incredible.
Yeah.
They looked like, so many times I'll be like, man, I'd love to see that in live action. Obviously it's CGI, but they looked stunning.
So
they
good.
Looked so flipping good. And that's a character from Prodigy that you'd be forgiven 90% of you not knowing who that is, but the big rock person that was walking along with Genesis blew my mind. Absolutely loved them. But Boothby Memorial Park, Boothby was the groundskeeper at the original Starfleet Academy, and he's been there for like 100 years or something ridiculous, and he kind of ended up being a bit of a mentor, specifically to Picard and to Janeway and to Wesley, Chakotay, basically anyone who is anyone that's gone through Starfleet Academy, they've interacted with Boothby, and he kind of has this way of picking out the legends and spending time with them.
Oh, interesting.
So Boothby is just this very integral part of Starfleet Academy. So yeah, very, very cool to give him a mention. That's an Easter egg that makes sense to me, and I love it.
Yeah, the camera kind of goes on to plaques in this one a bit more. There's definitely some name call out, so... I was like, I have no idea who that is, but I'm going to find out when I talk to Ian in a moment.
Some of them I didn't, like the Turner person that they mentioned. No idea, which is why I think we got more details about them, because I think that's one that's just made up
obscure for
the show. Yeah, I don't even know that I recognize that one.
Oh, I mean, that's great, because that was one of the scenes I was like, obviously, I feel like I'm missing something here.
No, that was, unless I've completely missed something, and it's always possible that I've missed something fundamental, I don't know a war leader that was teaching his troops Welsh and gave pips to his dog. I don't remember that.
The speech finally ends at this point. To seek, explore, innovate, boldly go where no one has gone before. It's a great honor to welcome you all to Starfleet Academy. And then the ships go off into the sky, and they make a delta. And I'm just like, just use drones.
It would be drones by now.
Drones would, they would phasers. Look so much better.
Just use phasers.
Just like a laser fireworks. Show.
It looked ridiculous, didn't it? It didn't look impressive. They were all looking out the window in awe, and I was like, what did I miss? What was I supposed to be looking at?
I'm wondering if it was like, wow. You know, when someone comes across a Walkman these days, wow, look at that. You know?
Wow, they went really retro.
Wow, this is like a retro thing.
I can confirm they do fireworks because Voyager, spoiler, gets home at the end of Voyager. Guess what the welcome is? Bunch of fucking fireworks.
Wow.
That's the final shot, is Voyager flying through fireworks. That's it. Ooh. Season over.
Oh,
show over.
Wow. Thanks for spoiling it for me.
Yeah. Done. You need to have that disappointment now before we do it later, because you may stop watching Star Trek. Speaking of underwhelming things, let's talk about the intro.
Yeah, we finally got to have the introduction.
We got a full intro there. What'd you think of it? Can you hum the tune for me?
No, I don't remember it at all.
No, I remember Cherry Blossom Tree and an on-the-nose metaphor. It might be the most underwhelming intro I've ever seen to a show ever.
Let's say that you guys skipped it at home. I'll just read my notes. Intro. Okay, we're watching this. There is a seed and it turns into the shape of a delta. It reaches up towards the dirt and there's a tiny seed and it grows into a space thing and it grows. This feels like WALL-E where drones are building stuff. Okay, it's a tree. Nope, it's the atrium. Ooh, we're looking overhead. There's a delta where the building is mixed with a tree. The buds are budding. The piano is pianoing, but that is not a piano.
Do you get it?
The leaves are leaving. The hallway is walking and no one is noticing the leaves in the hallway being sucked into the delta. Where at the exterior shot, there's the bay and the academy. And then that's when the rock person appears. And I was like, okay, I'm back in.
Let's go, rock tech. Yeah, disappointing. And I can't even like think it's going to grow on me. It just, there was nothing to that theme. The imagery was on the nose. Yeah, it was symbolic in the most basic cliche way possible. Like this, the delta is a seed and then a tree grows from the seed and block. I mean,
it's rebuilding. The whole intro is all about rebuilding.
Without being patronizing, mm-hmm. Iris could have done a better intro with a less on the nose metaphor. Like it felt the most basic metaphor you could possibly come up with, unless I'm missing something.
I mean, obviously the symbolism is there. Maybe what would have made it more appealing is to see the types of students coming together, the races and the alien, like just the different kinds of people, and it all kind of,
do you know what would have been better?
Forming into what we're seeing.
The end credits from the last episode where it had like the lights shining
lights
as
effect,
it went through at all. That makes a better opening. I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm just basic. Maybe just give me a ship flying through a nebula and I'll be happy with the opening.
It
but
was entirely
very
lacking a ship.
Very
yeah.
under. No, Athena was in there. It was just in its building transformer form.
Okay.
It was in its truck form.
Yeah.
It hadn't gone full Optimus Prime yet.
So basically, we see some of our buddies. We see Genesis and Happy, and we see Jaden. This is the Photonic, the one that is the Admiral's daughter?
An Admiral's daughter. Yeah.
And then the passive Klingon. And they're all kind of like hanging out in like a little alcove, just sort of like catching up. And essentially it's just sort of a shot to show what life in college is like. You know, you're just briefly catching up and then your iPad pings you and you've got to go to class.
Room assignments.
And they get their room assignments. Yeah. And we have that kind of back and forth with don't have sex with anybody for at least 6 months.
Jaden's voice is getting very distracting to me.
It's hard to make out.
It felt even more robotic. It felt like a filter that I could just put on my voice right now. It did not sound natural at all.
The trouble with it is, like we said, with the sound engineering, it does just get a little bit muddied. But yeah, we also learn kind of in this section that the Federation is rebuilding a new seat of government. They're thinking about Singapore. They're thinking about Paris, which comes up kind of later on when they decide where the new seat will actually be. This conversation is happening in this sort of like elevator lift
thing. Yeah,
it's a new lift. You're not standing while it's taking you around.
It's
you get a chance to sit down
finally. Yeah.
Yeah. And in this moment, I'm like, man, she is not, this is Captain Kitty is sitting with the doctor and with her number one.
Yeah.
And an exocomp.
And an exocomp. Entirely CGI. It didn't need to be. We had exocomps physical exocomps flying around in 1990-something, too.
Yeah.
Why did it have to be completely CGI, yeah, Ambassador? Yeah,
because it's just, it looks better.
Build one, just fucking build. It doesn't, though, does it? The only thing that was great, not the only thing, that's not fair, I did like it, mm-hmm, when they're constantly moving around, mm-hmm, and then it just goes, wow.
Yeah, I did.
As it comes out of scene. I love that.
Yeah, it was a little sassy. Yeah, I think it's the same one from the first episode as well.
I think it's
the red one.
Yeah,
Maybe it's like a recurring character that we'll see in every episode, kind of like in Seinfeld, there was a Superman in every episode somewhere.
Oh, is there?
I mean, that's what I heard. I never watched Seinfeld, so no, I don't know.
I love that we're talking about it.
But I always think about that, like how fun that they've just put this little Easter egg, you know, in every little...
Just turns... If that exocomp does turn up in every episode and ends up saving the day...
I would love it.
I'm here for it.
I would love it too. But what was bothering me about this one is, again, here we get that fast-paced conversation starting off. You've got the doctor who is wanting to have more... basically caustic substances
more
to play with.
More exciting mucus, yeah.
Than just the basic level. Like, these kids need to have something that can eat their brain. He didn't say this, but basically just eat their brains. And Captain Kitty's like, I will do anything to end this conversation, and doesn't even really, like, hadn't been paying attention very much either. And just
very,
like,
standard just how to deal with the doctor.
Yeah, which is, I don't know, that bothered me. And I was like, oh, okay, so she's both awesome and busy. And she's got her, like, you know, big glasses on. I love the character, Captain Kitty's wife.
I really am
enjoying her. But I felt like maybe, you know, when you've got a doctor who's wanting to order, you know, something that could break out of its containers and kill everybody, maybe you should pay more attention.
Right. What's jarring for me is that the humor beat with the doctor there is just a cover, because it's better than them just looking down the camera and talking to us, saying this information about finding the seat of power for the Federation, mm-hmm, and the Beta Zeds are coming to dinner is important, because the function of that is a big information dump. So they add a bit of humor just to cover it up. So it didn't quite kind of cohese together for me. But yeah, the important bits from that really is that they're just happy that the Beta Zeds have agreed to come and talk because of how rejected they felt by the Federation and how they've been behind this psionic barrier for 100 years or whatever, just hunkering down and protecting themselves. And if they join the rest of the Federation, it might be a domino effect that means more people join the Federation, and they also have more space, more security, good old colonizing
behavior.
More
trade routes and things like that.
Yeah, more trade routes. So that's the really important information, clumsily exposited, in my opinion.
Well, it was not all of that was in that particular scene. It was just like a little sprinkle in there. I think like the bulk of what you just said was the walk and talk between the war guy and the Admiral.
Admiral Vance, yeah.
Going up the stairs. Like, that's really when we had the walk and talk of a more explanation, which was important for me because I didn't know what was going on, but I perked up a Beta Zed and then I was immediately out because... One of the things they're talking about on the lift was Beta Zed. Then they get off of the lift and they're in the captain's quarters. And there are the two male roommates that don't want to be roommates anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know. The back and forth. How's it going with you? Because I'm going to skip around a little bit here because their relationship is interesting. Last episode, they hate each other, but then they're working together. This episode, they're back to hating each other. But then by the end, once again, they're working together.
It's too much. It's like it's this. I'm not saying you can't have up and downs in relationships, but it seems to follow the 60-minute episode thing rather predictably. Like, I feel like at the beginning of the next episode, we're going to have this conflict
like
between them.
Wash,
and then they
rinse,
get
repeat.
Yeah, just mm-hmm. wash, rinse, wash, repeat, all of that. And I don't know, that's just not super... That, for me, if you're doing a more episodic thing with an undercurrent, that's the undercurrent that you keep. Like, that's the evolution that I want to keep going along. I don't want them to be back to square one at the beginning of the episode. But having said that, we're only two episodes in. So these are often meant to be watched together because they know they're going to be releasing two at once. So maybe we'll see a bit more growth in episode 3 and not just this reversion back. But I mean, who knows? It could well be. I much prefer it when they're getting on with a bit of antagonism, but it does seem like back to the beginning of the dial.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely, something happened between the last episode and this one.
Something
where they kind of forgot that they all literally saved everyone's life and that Transformer Boy risked his life.
Yeah, basically, you know? Nearly died.
and nearly died.
Should
I don't know.
Be in therapy.
Just, I don't know. Yeah. Feels a little bit like, oh yeah, we missed something where they just still hate each other. But I have to say, I really liked by the end the way that that
oh,
kind
love
of circles
that.
Back
that was,
around.
That felt really wholesome. Yeah. I kind of loved that. He was helping him make his bed.
But yeah, anyway, there's also the reversion. So speaking of reversion, like going back, reversion? Yeah.
Regression?
Regression.
Both work.
Kind of reverting, I guess. Anyway, speaking of that, we have also that Captain Kitty has to kind of restate finding the mother again as we establish this episode. And she kind of says to Kayla before he leaves, like, Baraka could have been lying to you about this Goja 5. You know, have you thought about that? You know, you need to trust me. And so it kind of reestablishes that Caleb has tried to hack an exit a few times in the last 12 hours. Like he's been very active in the last half of a day.
Yeah, he hasn't just settled in and taken it. And
right. Which is good because that bothered us last episode.
Exactly. And the carrot they're dangling is this, is it Groja? Was it? Or Goja? Goja 5?
Goja 5, I think.
Yeah, Goja 5. The last known place that Baraka seems to think is where his mother will be.
The other thing I kind of liked about the scene as Caleb is dismissed, you know, number one's like, he needs his ass kicked. And Captain Kitty's like, he's been getting his ass kicked his whole life.
Yeah,
like,
right?
How much more of a mind fuck will it be if we actually give him some respect, you know, which is true, you know, and it kind of ends up working and it kind of is working for me too. It makes sense as to why. And even in this episode, she addresses this desire to find him for so long. And then she's now found him and he's not who she thought. And she's letting that go, but she still wants to have something that's matter. She wants to build something. And he kind of, maybe we were talking about just a moment ago about like, what is it that he found? And maybe that's it. It's like, he realizes he can be part of something.
I don't, yeah. I think what I'm struggling with is not enough trauma. So he was 6 or 7, 15 years from the age of 6 or 7, younger than Iris, between planets, between people, between food, prisons. How he's not nearly messed up enough. Like, he is adapting, for me, he's adapting too quickly. He has been on the streets for 15 years. His entire childhood and what beginning of his adulthood has been in the Badlands, just like searching for things, jumping from prison to prison, stealing to eat. He's, for me, adapting too quickly. He should have like some kind of shell shock where he's like sleeping on the floor, or they're almost taking it too lightheartedly. And I think that's, in this episode, what I was really failing to connect with him. It was almost too playful. It's not like an adopted kid that's been in the foster system where they're a bit, they've had a rough time.
Yeah.
He hasn't even had that stability. He's had nothing. He's just, since 6. Like, that's just wild to me.
No, I don't think you're wrong about that, because there's several things that were kind of gnawing at me as well. Like, how quickly he sits on the fence and the only reason he's sticking around is a pretty girl, you know. The he's got charisma, but and even the dialogue is essentially trying to state like the conflict between him and the Betazoid princess, right? Betazoid princess. She's like figuring out that he kind of used her for information, but the way that he's acting, I didn't really. It just feels like he's fumbling through kind of all of it, and maybe it's how it's maybe the actor isn't having the time to connect to the material long enough to like give some complexity to the face, to sort of nod to us the turmoil. You know, it is a very lighthearted vibe, and I agree with you on that. And it is sometimes a confusing thing.
I'm constantly reminding myself he was 6, jumped out a window
in the storm.
Space for 16 years. Fuck Jesus, that's crazy.
Well, the episode starts off with Happy being like, so you were in a prison and you were going to have to use your nubs and then you ended up here. He's like, yep, basically, you know, so there's a casualness to him that maybe is still because of youthfulness. I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm curious. I'm curious how the role will develop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the next thing we kind of jump into, I basically covered all of this. This is a beautifully eccentric, barefooted Chancellor, Nala, refusing Captain to wear. Kitty. Refusing.
She wants to let her paws out.
Yeah, she's got a little piggies out.
She's a little hippie.
Refuses to wear shoes, and this is I enjoyed that, but then it is like heavy exposition. Let's get everybody caught up on, and it is important. But again, it didn't feel organic to me. It was a big old information dump of here's what's going on with Beta Z. Here's why it's important. Here's what happened previously. And here's what we're going to do next. It did feel like all well acted stuff, my nerdy stuff that I love, but very exposition heavy. But was it a catch up that was useful for you, obviously?
Extremely helpful for me because I didn't watch the other show. And I think they know they have to do some heavy lifting. And this is something that you get so used to when you really start paying attention to how exposition is given to you when you're watching content. You know, which characters are saying it, the perspective that they have. So I don't know that I minded it too much, but it was a lot of information, you know, like it was a lot packed into several minutes of learning about how things are, but then also the idea of letting the students watch these negotiations, that it's a strategic move to include the academy because when the Betazoids come for their conversation, like they're bringing their children. And so, but all of that was happening so fast. I don't know that I understood exactly what was going to be happening in this episode.
One of the moments I like to sit in a bit longer, to be honest, like I think if you give that a bit more room to breathe, and even if like maybe you involve some of the students as well in like a briefing for like, okay, you're going to be interacting with the Beta Zeds. Here's why. Like almost be a bit more upfront with the exposition, because it almost like tried to hide the exposition in a conversation, whereas all three of them knew every bit of information that they were sharing. None of that was new to them. You have cadets there to explain the new stuff too.
That's what I was saying, or Caleb.
Yeah.
When Caleb sees her and suddenly becomes the person that's going to give her the tour.
Here's your crash course. Give him a debrief. On why this is really fucking important.
And then all of a sudden, he's finding out about this wall, and then he's thinking about his mom, and maybe everything kind of feels a bit more
organic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like linearly organic, where you're not just going, oh, they need to have this information before we even see this, these characters. Exactly. Like, no.
Trust your audience a little bit as well.
You know, like in the debriefing rooms in TNG when they would put the thing up on the wall and you get to kind of see it.
Yeah.
Let me see this fucking wall.
Yeah.
Like, sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. Just give me a funky graphic.
But obviously they're spending a lot of time, and I know that they're spending a lot of time now because some of the characters that come on this convoy, this envoy, end up staying indefinitely in Starfleet Academy, right? Yeah. And the seat of the Federation is going to be there. And I'm thinking to myself, great, does that mean that we get to go to Beta Z during the show? Because that'd be kind of fun.
Yeah. How many other planets are you going to piss off by unilaterally deciding that Beta Z will be the seat of government?
It's one of those things when you're watching Star Trek sometimes, if you're new to Star Trek, that gets a bit annoying, which is, there are some major nerds writing these things that they feel very confident that we need to spend a certain amount of time talking about the politics of these different planets and nations and races and all that stuff, because they've done something major across the board that needs to have some questions answered, and they're going to do it in this episode.
Yeah.
And we just have to kind of sit there and watch it and go, okay, I guess this is when we need the information.
And it is an element that's interesting to me. Like, that is the world building. And it I do want to know about it, but it felt a bit clumsy to me, this episode.
Me too.
It felt a bit just put the information in front of you.
Yeah, I think they just could have cared a bit more about it. So an episode like this, it's like shuffling a deck of cards. And they just have a lot of information, and then they kind of decide they're going to put it in here, and we're going to chop between scenes, you know. And I think they just could have done a little bit like chunkier cards instead of having 15 things to just put together. Uh-huh. It could have been 5. And then, okay, you've pieced them together, and you can kind of go back and forth a little bit. But we go straight from this to Tig Notaro. How am I supposed to give a shit about anything Beta Z when I'm watching my favorite, one of my favorite scenes this episode?
Jet Reno, let's talk about it. Let's talk about one of your favorite scenes. She is a gift, an incredible gift. I've loved her character ever since she was introduced in Discovery. She's come with the crew of Discovery from the past, like she said, nearly 1,000 years into the future. And now instead of staying with Discovery, she is teaching at the academy. And that was kind of set up in Discovery as well, that that's where her and Tilly would be going. Love it. Just love Jet Reno. She's so good.
Yeah.
So fun. And she does put Caleb in his place perfectly as well. And I love that she wasn't fazed at all by him. It's like, I've been around the block way too many times. Here's where you get it, kiddo.
One of the reasons I love this is that as a professor, she's tying what's happening in the room into the education of physics, into the education of quantum physics.
Yeah.
But the quipping back and forth between Caleb and this professor is, it's just so good. There's so many really fun lines. And it wasn't like, she didn't feel like she was challenging him. She felt like she was like, okay, well, that's who you are. But let's tie it into what we're doing now. And okay, so you know your shit. You're here for the real shit. Okay, who are you?
What's the real shit that you're talking
about?
What's
your real shit? Yeah. You know, did you do a mixtape? What's the worst birthday present that you've ever got? And he's like, I was arrested. And she's like, you can never have enough misdemeanors in quantum physics. And there's just these great, great lines. And she has like this whole entropy thing. And so I don't know. It's just really, really smart. It's like one of those things where you're going in a battle against somebody that in every single way will outsmart you, outlast you, outwit you, outwisdom you. And he just doesn't see it. And we see it instantly and are just like ready for her to like eat him up. And the little...
It delivers beautifully.
It delivers the little two finger wag at the end. Like, I'm watching you.
I got your number.
It makes me feel like, oh, this is a relationship I'm going to enjoy. Like, I would love to see the professors bringing out of a rough person the parts that are going to make them great.
That should be the... I mean, when you say Starfleet Academy, wouldn't that be great if that was the mission statement of the show, is to show how the old guard and the experience crafts and harnesses the new generation.
And I think that they are.
Cadets.
That is what this episode said many times.
I hope so.
Because even Captain Kitty is like, here, when she's going to bat for why Kayla was even at Starfleet, she's like, he is incredible. He's so talented. He's too good and he's bored with his life, and we're lucky to have someone like him to give somebody a second chance to start over in the space who should be in prison. Yeah. So.
Well, it's great. All of our favorite scenes have been the ones in the classroom, which is super duper fun.
It does end with him having the embarrassing moment. How did that work for you?
Not really. I didn't do much for me, to be completely honest. It's a means to an end. It's a conversation starter for when he meets Tarima. It's fine. Didn't do a huge amount for me.
I think it was the payoff that we expected when we saw the doctor give mucus to everybody at the beginning. You know, we know something is going to happen. We need it to happen because there's kids carrying around mucus cans. So I think it's meant to be like, oh, he's having a humbled moment in front of everyone where he was being that guy.
I just feel like Tig gave him the humble moment. I don't think we needed another one on top of that.
Yeah. And I guess it's like him going, okay, I don't need this shit. And then he's going
to
leave.
It reminds me of Malfoy. Something happens to Malfoy in like the first movie that humbles him. It reminded me of that. And Caleb isn't Malfoy. Like, he's still the protagonist. He's still the good guy. I'm not entirely sure what that was doing, but... I was too busy, really, to be honest, thinking about the intercom noise, which was dum 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 dum.
Was it?
Did you not hear that? Oh,
I don't.
So just before they say you need to go to your next class, it was basically ending the class. Your next class will be starting.
Oh, I heard the noise. I didn't notice.
And the noise was dum 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 dum, but like a little bit faster. I was like, oh, so you're acknowledging that the Star Trek theme exists in Star Trek?
Yeah.
It's like Boimler humming the Next Generation theme in the Turbo Lift. I was like, why do you know that?
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
Yeah.
They just need to hurry up and give us the United Federation of Planets theme song and just tell us that it is the Star Trek theme. That would be the perfect way to do it. But I think we've actually seen that somewhere before. Anyway, Caleb tries to exist. I mean, that's fair. That's fair.
Caleb exists.
Caleb tries to escape and is met by the very beautiful, immediately beta Zed, Tarima Sadal. How did you like the meet cute ambassador?
Oh, I love Tarima.
I love her. I love her so much. I'm going to get this out of the way really quick. I don't understand why she doesn't have black eyes. It was really distracting. Beta Zoids always have black eyes. Always. Contact lenses, they have black eyes. That's what they do. They have black eyes. It's one of the weird things. Instead of giving them a nose ridge or ears or something, they gave them black eyes because Deanna has black eyes. Her mother has black eyes. There's another Beta Zoid that has black eyes. In the books I've read, the characteristic black eyes of a Beta Zed. Why didn't she have black eyes?
You mean look it up real quick?
Yeah.
How do you spell her name?
Tarima Sadal. Tarima Sadal. If there's an in-universe answer, fine. That's great. I just hope it isn't because they forgot.
Okay. I'm trusting quick internet searches and not doing deep dives. Possibilities for why her eyes are not black, according to the AI amalgamation.
Yeah.
Solid black eyes mean fully telepathic Beta Zoids.
That's not true for Deanna, because Deanna's empathic. She's half human and still has the black eyes.
Normal eyes are partially, like Deanna.
No,
are you
Deanna
sure
had black eyes. 100%. She had black eyes.
So maybe she's not fully telepathic.
But she has an inhibitor on her because she's so fucking telepathic, she kills people!
Is that what it is?
That's what she said at the end of the episode.
She said she hurts people. You think she kills people?
I hope so.
With her brain powers?
With her mind
bullets. She did go to the war division.
She fucking did. She's melting people's brains.
Can she shield her abilities?
No, that's why she has the inhibitor.
I mean, in her eyes or something.
Oh, fuck knows. I don't know. It irked me.
Yeah, understandably
so.
Only
if they forgot. Any other reason? Fantastic. Even if they say, yeah, we know, we don't care. Great. Just don't let it be that they forgot that's a Beta Zoid thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, off my soapbox, she is beautiful, charismatic, really, really, really enjoyed her. And I really enjoyed that she ended up going to the war college. I was like, oh, fuck yeah, let's go. That's really interesting. How is the meet cute for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm relieved to see another kind of character introduced and then going, oh, maybe this is going to stick around because she's obviously of the Starfleet Academy age. So maybe this is what the show is doing. And I think it was fun. Surprise, surprise, her brother is also joining. And I really enjoyed the two of them together. So I mean, she's working for me on basically all levels. I was really enjoying
it. I'm with you. We then move straight into the negotiations that are being held publicly in front of the cadets, which just baffled me a little bit. Amran Sadal, the president, who's using sign language, which I loved. I thought that was an excellent touch to incorporate sign language. Whatever the reason he's using it, just worked really well for me. I loved that. But it was just so interesting to have these negotiations so open. And the Beta Zoids clearly making ridiculous statements just so that the Federation will be forced to be the ones to reject them and the Beta Zoids can save face. This scene is all about them making crazy claims that they'll never agree to.
Yeah, it's also an opportunity to just remind people how bad they've had it. That there's enemy that they are... They're very vulnerable and they can't mess around. They need help in a major, major way. So,
and the Venari Vaal are the same people that the Bracket was a part of and was attacking. They're clearly like a big evil force in the region.
Yeah, politics are politics, man. And it is interesting to have it like all be very public, but at the same time, I think it's an interesting idea to just offer something so vulnerable and so huge in that space.
And I've got to say, I do like it when Star Trek does diplomacy.
Yeah.
This was just really basic for me. There wasn't a lot of nuance to it. It was a storyline and kind of like a tactic we've seen, not just in Star Trek before, but in a lot of these like diplomatic posturing kind of episodes across content. It was the people that you want to bargain with make ridiculous claims and then you meet somewhere in the middle with a novel excuse. So it just didn't, it kind of like did the bare minimum to be a diplomacy episode of Star Trek, if that makes sense.
Yeah. The two siblings are like, let's get a tour. And then Caleb becomes a tour guide. And then he takes her to the Gideon S. Turner wing. Yes. That's the one you don't know what it was, right? We don't know who that person is.
No, so Gideon isn't anybody that I've heard of. There are Gideons that have popped up in Star Trek, but I think this is the one that you didn't know. Yeah, I think this is just one that they're like, okay, you can't know every single name because we didn't just stop having famous people after 2364.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And they seem to know about him and they're kind of like either making jokes back and forth, but I think that's what we were saying earlier about it lost me a bit on like, okay, I'm not part of this conversation. But we do get to see like them kind of walking through and that like kind of commons ground area where we're still playing Frisbee and we're still playing Hacky Sack.
Hacky Sack was fine because it was a hologram. I'm fine with that. Why the fuck are we just playing Frisbee back and forth? Like they're 6-year-olds just tossing a disc back and forth.
We saw Wesley play his weird pleasure game. Like we've seen...
That's what it should be.
We've seen
every
cool
single
shit.
Cadet should be using the visor from the game. Yeah. All of them. Yes. And there should be nobody in classes. Fuck, they should all be on holodecks.
They should all be on holodecks. But I mean, it was just that, hey, doesn't this look familiar? Doesn't this look like your college days?
Doesn't this look familiar, but with lights on it?
Uh-huh.
One thing I did like in this scene is a little nice touch is and I didn't write it down, but Tarima gives her full title. She's like the first daughter of the first house of whatever, which and then inheritor to the something something. What I do like is that is a clear callback to Deanna's mother, who always very proudly presents herself as Luoxana Troi, daughter of the fifth house, holder of the sacred chalice of Reeks, heir to the holy rings of Beta Zed. So it is a continuation of like this Beta Zed royalty title thing. So that, I was like, you know that about Beta Zeds, but you didn't know about the black irises, which is fine.
What if the neural inhibitor changes her eyes?
Could be. Love it.
Okay.
If that's it. Great.
If her beautiful. when her neural inhibitor pops off and her eyes turn black.
Love
oh,
it. Let's
shit.
Go. I take it all back. Okay, it's okay, great. Okay, okay. But they go on to stellar cartography after that. And this is where we can jump forwards to like the end and this scene here. I didn't get her objection that Caleb used her came out and punched me in the face. I was like, are you kidding right now? It felt so contrived and contrite. I was like, are you even a real existing person right now? Because he is clearly taking her to stellar cartography. She knows that he has a desire to search for this planet. She then volunteers the wristband after saying, can we trust each other? Can we talk? She volunteers that without him saying the specifics of why he wants the planet. But then when he admits later on that it was to find his mother, she gets pissed off that he's using her. And I'm like, where is this? It was so clearly written to be a conflict so that they can have a lover's tiff and depart ways immediately and then have some reconciliation. But it was the most unbelievable objection I can remember seeing. It was so bizarre to me that she was offended by him using her access to find a planet that she volunteered and was happy to help him find.
Yeah, I was confused about some of it, but I feel like, and this is a fault of mine, I tend to fill in the gaps with my own version of what's going on to make it make sense. When I was considering her reaction to her version of Caleb's betrayal or whatever she's thinking, right? In my mind, her character is this extremely isolated,
sheltered,
but then also used like coming from a society where you can hide nothing from each other.
No.
So honesty is expected.
Yes.
And it's kind of like, why would you do that? You know? So to her, it was a pretty offensive thing to just, why not just share everything? Because in her world, why wouldn't you share everything? Not only do you share everything and you talk about it. There's such an openness.
But how did she feel used?
That part was the part that I was confused by. It happened so suddenly. And again, because they're talking back and forth without a lot of consonants and vowels, there's not a lot. It was very fast. It was very quickly delivered and...
It really took me out of the episode. It really pissed me off because it really felt like we need the two lovers to argue and have their dramatic flare-up. It felt so just kind of soap opera drama. Like, we're better than this. If you want them to have a fight, make it about something real.
Here's the other part of it. If they wanted us to believe that Caleb actually planned that. It was completely lost in how it was either edited together, something completely. Was cut.
Yeah.
You know, we're missing something.
It didn't
so, yeah,
look like that, he did anything insidious at all.
No, it was just a very forced thing. Because you're right. She offered this, you know, star chart
access.
And she offered the access. And then...
Were you just using me the whole time? For what? How, what? He was... You asked him to be the tour guide. He didn't pursue you.
Yeah.
Wild to me. It really tainted the episode for me.
Yeah. That was probably my least favorite part too. But he does find Goja 5. Like he does actually
see. Yes, he does. Sorry, I forgot that.
It immediately. Like it comes up instantly because that's how fast programs work. And he can learn, you know, more about this very important thing. And this information is something that he's able to share with Captain Kitty later. And then they're able to find out even more about, you know, where his mother is. So it's kind of a cool... It was a cool moment. It looks really beautiful. I forgot to say something earlier when we were in, and I apologize for not remembering character names, but that's just me, the Tig Notaro's room when they were talking with her.
Yeah.
When the system kind of had a little bit of a failure, I love that the school's not like perfectly put together. There's some things that are not going right, you know? And all of the projections around the room went away. We realized where we were in the actual building.
Yeah.
And it looked really neat because suddenly we're in the sky of San Francisco because we're at the kind of topmost part of the school in that like UFO looking chamber kind of right there at the top.
Saucer section.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's cool. It kind of gave me spatially, I'm a little bit more aware of where I am in their world.
I love this about the Academy. That. I feel very familiar with what the Academy looks like. I think the set design is flipping top notch. I think they've learned some really good lessons from Discovery.
So in the cartography room, it kind of had that same vibe, right? It just looked really beautiful because we have this beautiful overlay of the stars and this hopeful moment where Caleb is closing his eyes. He's almost just wishing and hoping that his mother appear. And I love this moment because the way that the way that Tarima is like looking at him, it's almost like,
oh, this is important.
This delicious snack of this moment of emotion and complexity, and he
let a wall down.
Yeah, I could almost just see her eating it like a delicious meal, and I thought that it was really fun to watch.
No, I do like that, and I think the psionic wall barrier is a really interesting thing as well. I want to know more about that immediately. Like the collective power of the Betazoid people has gone towards making this wall. Maybe it's just technology, but I'd like to think it's. Maybe they have like wizards that are just focusing on this force field. And a result of that is that it's impenetrable and stuff has happened inside this barrier that Starfleet and the Federation don't know about, which is fascinating.
It's really fun. Yeah. The other thing that I really like at this point in the show about the introduction of Tarima. Calamari. Oh, shit. No.
Turmeric. Let's call her Rick.
When you have a character like Caleb and there's other women around and he's this horny boy or whatever, and you're just like, okay, what are we gonna do here? To introduce another character that has his interest and is a Betazoid, Beta Zed.
I've been interchanging. We're going to keep interchanging.
Because we just don't know
the
right now.
The planet is Beta Zed. They are Betazoids.
Okay. The Beta Zedazoidian. Listen. It's so smart to just, let's just deal with the trauma from like Counselor Troy-esque vibes. Let's just get to it. Let's not have however many seasons of this show where we're just going to be letting him suffer in his emotion. Let's put a character right away that's going to slice through it so that we don't have to watch that happen.
It's one of the most interesting things about Betazoids that we forget because Deanna never does it.
She does. Stop saying
it
that.
I'm gonna nudge you whenever Deanna comes on screen and just be like, she can read emotions. She can read emotions. If you constantly watch episodes thinking that, it is so frustrating to see how often she does nothing with that information.
Maybe she's been told not to, like, there's a debrief off screen. Like, I can't.
Maybe there's anything that happens off screen. Put it on screen if it's important.
Maybe it's not important.
Everything's important.
Oh my gosh. Anyway, it's interesting for her to have the maybe being doing the Deanna thing that you think is so important to do. Mm-hmm. I hate how much you hate on Deanna.
I don't hate on her. I hate on what the show did with her.
I'm just saying.
Didn't do with her. She's great. Is great. The show didn't show us her greatness.
Yeah. It's more frustrating rewatching Worf, though.
Just as. For me, right up there. Great. Both got screwed.
Great.
And each other. So
the Star Charge looks really cool.
Yeah.
And then visually to see like the Beta Zetazoidian charge pop up. That's a pretty fun thing. And he just once again kind of closes his eyes like he's making some kind of a wish, and it just worked really well.
Whenever there's something like romantic happening between them, I could not unhear the one of the Disney songs from Beauty and the Beast. There wasn't there before. There's something sweet and almost kind, but he was mean and he was coarse and unrefined. How perfect is that? But now he's dear and so unsure. I wonder why I didn't see it there before. I want to talk to somebody who will never admit it because Disney will sue them. But if there is it like in the score and the music between them when they were on screen, there was like half of that melody in the score, and I swear to God it's there. I'm not mishearing it. It was there, Danae. No, that is your name.
Yes. Yeah, that's me.
It was there, Deanna.
You married me. Remember that? Remember that time?
So the negotiations go terribly, but after those terrible negotiations, he's like, do you want to see a thing?
Do you want to build a snowman?
And it's not his penis. It was a humpback whale ambassador.
Same difference.
What? Wait.
I'm sorry.
Wait.
I couldn't help myself.
Why is this humpback whale important?
Probably because it's the one that was brought from the ship.
Not unless you think it's 800 years old.
It's the baby of 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 the baby.
It is very much most likely.
Very much most likely, probably not, but maybe.
No. I mean, it has to be. Because
it's the ancestor
the humpback whales were extinct until the whales were brought back to the future.
So this is all thanks to James T. Kirk.
George and Gracie, the whales that were brought to the future by James T. Kirk. Yep. And I just love that we get to see a humpback whale in, I'm going to call it Cetacean Ops.
I did too. In my notes.
I don't think they exclusively called it or explicitly called it Cetacean Ops, but it was most definitely a descendant of George and Gracie, because Gracie was pregnant when she arrived in the future.
Oh,
so
look at
love
that.
That. Absolutely love that. Most importantly, though, my other prediction, the Doctor singing, also happened. We had a lovely opera rendition during a little evening party where the diplomacy goes sideways. Speaking of sideways, Ambassador. I'm the king of segues today. A sideways glance from Genesis. Skip, did you see it?
Yeah, of course I saw it.
What are we doing? How do you fail the Bechdel test without even talking?
We also, like, so they go, when they were with the whales, they were leaning in for a kiss, and then they're interrupted by all three of their parents.
Yeah, right.
And so it wasn't just that the negotiations went terribly. It's also that she was, you know, love kidnapped essentially, and they kind of got in trouble. But yeah, I definitely saw the glance of Genesis looking at Caleb, you know, thinking about like not being able to. I mean, who knows? We have to insert our own thoughts as to what she's thinking. But the forlorn look at him as he goes off once again with Calamari is there for us to interpret.
Yeah, love triangles always fun.
It's probably more like a Pentagon, honestly, because
it feels like it. Yeah, absolutely.
If they don't end up in an orgy,
I mean, it would be the first time in Star Trek that there's an orgy.
Would it?
Actually, it can't be.
Like that's
no, that's bullshit.
Happened.
I immediately thought of three examples where an orgy almost certainly happened.
Yeah, don't think about that too much though. Think about this great party that everybody's at, where they're having to stand around a table where there's like a little flame in the middle and. There's all this food and...
Break their necks to watch the opera that's happening 100 foot above them.
There's a... Yes, with closed captions for anyone who's interested.
In English.
And then I love them when he's judging us and I don't care the hell if he can sense it. And she's like... and then number one's like, they're best against our best, a match to the death or whatever. And she's like, what is wrong with you? No, really, what is wrong with you?
I love that. That's great. The humor beat is really working for me. The humor is great.
I'm really enjoying it and it's needed. This is also when Happy kind of comes up to Genesis and says, people are telling me that I'm just too much and maybe I just don't fit in here. And then she says, I woke up at 4 a.m. to recite the alphabet backward.
You fit in here.
This is where we belong. And then Transformer guy comes up and puts his arms around him and they kind of roll their eyes and walk away. And you know, our crew is still in there somewhere. You know, I just thought about, what is the title of this episode tied into this episode?
Beta test.
So it's a beta Z thing.
Beta Zoid, beta Z, beta test. Yeah.
That's so stupid. Okay.
Yeah, moving on.
I just thought of that. I was like, wait a second. Our crew, our people. And I kept thinking, like, what's our crew going to do in this test? And
as soon as I mentioned the beta Zoids were coming to dinner, I was like, oh, beta test. Of course it is. Someone's really happy with
it
that title.
It should have been called the beta Zoids are coming to dinner. That's what it should have been.
This, and also at the party, Chancellor Nala puts her foot in it, and the beta Zed president uses that as an excuse to fuck off and leave. And Vance is like, this was what it was always about. They were always here just so that they could get us to reject their offer and they could say no and be offended.
The other thing that happens kind of in this scene, like as Calamari walks off to go meet up with
Tarima,
Caleb, the brother kind of stops her, and you think that it's going to be the quintessential, like, sis, you can't do that. You have responsibilities.
Get it.
But instead, he's like, chaos boy, huh? And she, or chaos boy, he's a surprise boy. Good for you. Like, and he's like, go get it. And I loved it.
That.
Go get
that
him.
Was a
it
nice
made
spin.
Me. It made me so happy because it's a good brother sister relationship. It's not like where they're
overly protective or
rivalry, or the things that you're used to seeing. It's a supportive
relationship. It's so confusing because there was some of the most heavy-handed, ham-fisted cliches I've ever seen in this episode, and then some real bright spots like that that were really refreshing.
Yeah, they're definitely willing to subvert expectations about some stuff.
Sometimes. Well, I think that the next important scene, Nala has the stay now conversation with Caleb, and how I'm not going to strong arm you into staying. You've got to choose to be here. It could be better with you here, etc. And that gives her the brainwave. I didn't quite make the connection between the brainwave of she has the epiphany and says, you're a genius, because she realizes that the way to keep the Beta Zeds is, or the Beta Zoids, is to offer them the seat of government on Beta Zed. And then
he says something like, in physics, it's something you can build. And she's like, oh, you're a genius.
Yeah, that was
like, I think
pretty,
it's the building something
right,
new.
Pretty disconnected epiphany, but that's fine. He goes and apologizes to Tarima in order to... So this is where it really lost me. A, you don't need to apologize for that, my friend. You did only know her for 5 minutes. She volunteered the information. You didn't use her. She used you because you were interesting. This is when he's using her. So, like, he apologizes for that, which wasn't even using her. But now he's using her to get her dad to go back to the table. His apology is just so that she can convince her dad to go back to the diplomat. Like, now you're using her. This is the bit she should be mad at.
Man, you want to know what bothered me about this scene?
Go on.
Why are we running anywhere? Just teleport there.
Oh, that's true.
Like, this is that the forced idea of like, oh no, we're in a hurry. We have to catch up to something. It's like, dude, you can bamf wherever
everywhere.
You fucking want to go.
Yeah.
Just bamf to the front door.
I guess maybe...
Why are you pushing people aside to run after her?
Yeah. I guess maybe there's like a conservation
really
of energy thing.
It really bothered me, okay?
That's fair.
I don't know. They both poofed in whenever they went on their tour.
That's so true. It's so true. I don't know.
Why not poof in whenever you're going out?
Yeah. Maybe it's the danger of being shot. Like if you just poof in front of the princess, they're going to shoot you. Anyway, everybody can be Nightcrawler now, apparently. The next thing is they agree to move the seat of government to Beta Zed, not Paris. Everybody stands up, says, I am Spartacus. And
not everybody stands up.
Oh, who doesn't stand up?
The people who are already standing.
That's fair. Yes, Vance and...
There's a whole group in the back and they wish that they were that cool.
Oh, there
cool.
we go. In the cheap seats.
Yeah.
Yeah. That ending didn't super work for me. Like, I'm glad that Beta Zed is rejoining the Federation. I'm glad they didn't feel obligated to keep them out. I'm glad they did bring them back in, but it wasn't super satisfying the way that they went about it.
What's difficult is knowing at the beginning how it's going, like, they're going to have an agreement. They're not going to bring in the Beta Zoid whole conversation unless there's going to be a reconciliation of some kind.
Some progress for the story. Yeah.
So I'm kind of just checked out, like I am on a hologram episode going, none of this is real anyway.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't really ever anything at stake for me individually. So that was just the background. So no, it didn't. It wasn't that it didn't work for me. It was just like, it was inevitable.
It wasn't your bag. Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
I do like the idea of the kids starting to stand up to show that they're unified. Like,
yeah, I did get some feelings from that. I just know that the logic that we took to get there and then the final thing that brings them back to the table, it didn't make me go, wow, that was a really clever solution. Whereas when I see Picard do some diplomacy, the writing backs it up and I'm like, man, that was a clever solution. Like, you shouldn't be writing TV shows, Mr. Screenwriter. You should be working for the UN doing diplomacy shit.
You know what it missed?
This felt super basic.
You know what it missed? It missed the... So she says traditions and examining what we had to become something new. And so we're going to move the Federation to Beta Zed, right? Okay. There's an opportunity there to talk about the importance about shifting away the seat of power from good old America. To an international or an
interstellar
in this case environment. And I think maybe a different writer or a different episode maybe would have given us some, I don't know, an opportunity to have that. Like, there's so much dialogue happening, we're missing some heart about what Star Trek is supposed to kind of feel. And so while this feels like, okay, you know, you're trapped behind this wall and now you're free because you can make your own choices, there was a real, that should feel bigger.
It really should.
Yes, we're talking absolutely. About Federation's central hub, where it started on Earth, moving to a totally different
big concession
planet in a different system. Like, we're talking about a huge change. It's not even everything Federation feels like America, you know, in that way.
It's like having NATO. It'd be like having NATO in Washington and then be like, okay, let's move NATO because it's not just America. Let's move it to somewhere that is European, somewhere like that.
But then not only moving it there, but like having a conversation about why it's important to not have such an important seat, such an important collection of beautiful minds trying to do greater things not exist in the same place all the fucking time.
I've just had this brainwave of, what, like you said, it didn't feel big enough. It doesn't feel big enough. Do you know why? It absolutely can't feel big enough because this isn't Star Trek Federation. This isn't Star Trek birth of whatever comes next. It isn't Star Trek Diplomatic Corps. It's Star Trek Starfleet Academy. This is in the wrong show. Like, this is important world building. It doesn't belong in Starfleet Academy. Like, to do that story justice and how important that is, that needs to be the focus of a different TV show dealing with the Diplomatic Corps, dealing with rebuilding the Federation so that Starfleet Academy can deal with rebuilding the people and rebuilding the crews and Starfleet that is going to populate the Federations and whatever.
Yeah, I think
I think it's a different show.
And I also feel like it would be a great thing to watch on a different planet.
Yeah.
Like let's see what it's like to be the minority.
Yeah.
You know?
Completely agreed. Not just a humans-only club. It's just, I think that's what's really hit me. Like, this episode two, if episode one and two are meant to be your mission statement for what the show is meant to be, the episode two, I have no idea what this show is meant to be. Because the most important stuff was building the Federation.
I still like I'm having a good time. I'm still having a good time with it.
I still
It did a lot.
I'm with you. I still like it.
It did a lot. But like last episode, it did a lot, but this episode does a lot in a different way.
In a completely different way.
It's like going to a buffet and it's just too, like, just focus on having a great salad bar instead of having that and that and that and that.
You don't have to do the world's foods.
Yeah.
And I get it. Like, I love world building and there is a way, of course, to do world building through a very niche show as well. But I don't know what this show is meant to be if it's going to try and do these huge world building swings.
It did feel like a big one.
But have a really niche title.
It did feel like a big one, but only because they're moving the Federation now. Like, if they had come to some other kind of an agreement that still felt far away, like, yeah, that's okay, you guys made that concession, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
And it also doesn't matter because the focus should be on the students. Like, it should be on Starfleet Academy. Like, that didn't feel important to Starfleet Academy to me.
I'm trying to come up with, like, an example, and I don't know that it's important, but this just as a way of flexing our brains here. What is something, a big aha, big, huge deal, something that was revealed in like the MC universe on a movie.
The MCU?
Mm-hmm.
It would be the existence of the multiverse, probably. That there are parallel universes where the X-Men like, exist, the Fantastic Four.
When that happened in the movies, you're like, wow.
Yeah.
That was just revealed.
Yeah.
That felt big.
It felt big to me because it was really, I mean, Doctor Strange nudged at it, but then it was Homecoming where you have three different Spider-Men interacting together where you're like, oh, the toys can all be playing together. That's fun. And that was I think it was revealed really effectively.
So it would be like having that in like episode 2 of Loki, where it's like a TV show about something else and they have this big reveal that happens. Oh, well,
Marvel
like,
did do
here.
That. Marvel would do that in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They would have big reveals that are then undone by the next movie.
Yeah.
But you're right. And it feels weird. It's like, is this as important as I think it is?
Because it doesn't feel important.
Put it like center stage.
But then like upon reflection in this conversation, it feels like it should feel more like a big, oh, wow, that's a huge deal.
We need another concurrent show going along with this. If Starfleet Academy wants to be like niche and at Starfleet Academy, I think it needs another parallel show that's doing the big, big work of what's happening in the galaxy in the 3200s right now.
I just feel like we're missing this little, like now in my mind, there's so many people that are building the Federation and they're like, okay, I guess I'm moving to Beta Z.
Yeah, guess so.
Like that decision has just made. Been made. And so we're going to have shuttles.
So much for being a diplomacy.
Big,
a democracy.
Big shuttles filled with families and people and all of the things that you need to build that are leaving Earth to go do that. And Earth suddenly has lost a tourist trap or whatever, you know?
It's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
It's a big thing. It's a big concession.
At least huge to us concession. Here in this moment, it is. But
it's interesting.
But don't think about it too much because we have to talk about the last part of the show. We have to talk about the last couple scenes of this episode.
Anisha made it out of Goja 5 and is on to somewhere else. And Chancellor...
That's the mom. The mom made it out.
Yeah. Chancellor Nala is giving him all of the information to dig into where she ended up next and if she's been making communications with people. And the most important thing is that he can now trust the apple.
The end.
The spicy apple.
Oh, wait, no, it's not the end.
No, not the fully end, but yeah. Well, that's the next piece of the puzzle. That's the next bit of the journey to find his mother.
The last scene of this episode really works for me, and it's what gives me... There's several things that kind of give me hope for this show throughout this episode, but the end scene is certainly a strong one. It's fun to watch... When a scene makes you feel like you just dropped in and you're just literally a fly on the wall...
Slice of life.
And you're just... And they do it, and it does it well. It feels fun. In this case, I don't feel like I'm missing anything. I don't care what this chatty brother is really talking about.
Just, they're doing lifts.
It's just the camaraderie between them and this sort of like friendship that you can feel has just started, but it's really important. And then the casual, like, I'm not talking about my sister. That's weird. She said to give this to you. And then he goes back to his, it didn't have to be a big deal. And then Caleb puts on this jewelry, which I don't really know if we saw her wearing it. I don't remember.
No,
is it what
I don't
she scanned
what
to? Was it what she scanned for the photography thing?
Maybe.
Yeah, I think it. That's the first thing it made me think about. But anyways, he puts it on, and then he's kind of like in this moment where he's thinking about just doing better for himself in general.
Oh, man, yeah.
He goes to make his bed.
I love it. I love it. Great setup and payoff.
Without even, hey man, do you need help with that? No teasing or whatever. His asshole number two comes over. He's like, dude, what are you doing? Like, you got to tuck it like this.
Tuck fold.
It's just that recognition that, he's doing something. Let me become a part of it. And Caleb didn't say, get the fuck away from me,
no,
man.
No, I've filled my heart. It's the kind of shit I live for. I really, really enjoyed that.
Here's what it's like. We talked about this recently. Me being a person who doesn't know how to like tidy my own space. Because I wasn't taught. Now, I didn't live in the streets like Caleb did.
You pointing
at
me.
I've had a bed. I've had a bed. I know how to, but I didn't have a parent that was like really adamant about life skills in certain areas. And so I've always struggled with that. So it's always meant a lot to me to have people that are kind of like, do you want help with that? Like just coming over and joining my world. And like the day that I had to move into a house, and I just had a whole bunch of like kitchen items and empty kitchen and a whole bunch of cupboards. I was like, I do not know what to do with any of this stuff. I don't know where it should go.
Where do the spatulas go?
I don't know why it makes sense to put things in certain spots. Like it's just or an empty closet is terrifying to me. I need someone to go in and put it somewhere. And I'm like, okay, that's where that goes. Or hanging things on the wall. How terrifying to hang things on the wall. What it's do you mean it's going to live there permanently? What if I made a mistake? You what if I want to change it? But that, so all of the things of just not knowing and then being with someone who's just like, let's just do this. And this is how we're going to fix that. Or this is what we're going to do. It just feels so good. So in that moment watching Caleb, I was like, man, I've needed that buddy so many times. Just to kind of like be like, oh, you don't know how to do that? Cool. Let me just show
Let's get it. No judgment.
And it was just casual. Just yeah. It was so nice.
Or judgment in a way that makes you feel comfortable because it was kind of jokey.
And another time that the show does the casual thing many times. Another time that I really appreciated, there was the brother and the sister in exchange. I really appreciated that kind of casual approach. And when they got into their fight, when Calamari and Caleb got into their fight.
Yep.
When he's like, he like quipped something to her at the end and said.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's like, he says, you're just sheltered, go back to your home and hide in your box or whatever.
And she's like, okay. And she just walks off.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
It wasn't like a, why are you treating me this way? There was a, she's like, yep, I'm out.
Yeah.
And I really liked that because that's how I would exit that scene.
The end of the argument. Yeah.
It
completely.
Just made it's sense. Just, it's just yes. like, okay, I'm not talking to you anymore. You're a fucking crazy person.
You're an asshole.
So there's just like these certain things that I think they're getting really, really well.
It feels very real.
It feels real. Yeah. And then there's part of it that's still feeling a bit forced. And so it was a juxtaposition episode for me, but overall I liked it.
Could be some growing pains. I absolutely sound like I hated this episode.
You really do.
I really am enjoying the characters, the world that they've established. I really am enjoying that. I hated that fight. And I think the big swing of the Beta Z stuff just feels like it needs to be in a different show. I want to get into the Starfleet Academy stuff and we'll just see what happens next. We'll see. I hope they don't do too much mystery boxing with his mother. I hope they don't feel obligated to explain too much about what's happening in the universe, which sounds weird for Ian to say that, because I want to know more about my Star Trek universe. But this is Starfleet Academy. Like, don't trick us. Like, if you couldn't get a Star Trek 3200 show greenlit, don't try and backdoor it into Starfleet Academy. Give me Starfleet Academy, and we'll see what happens next. Like, I know that sounds, it feels weird saying that, but I'm like, if you're going to call your show Starfleet Academy, stick to that. Like, give me that. And like, pepper in some other stuff, but give me Starfleet Academy.
I think that they knew that they wanted to have a Beta Z character and they had to do a little bit of legwork after the burn and everything to make it make sense as to how they would even come into this facility. And I think it's really smart and important, but I'm with you. I'm hoping that by episode 3, we're going to see what a day in the life of an Academy student is really like.
Let's go. Let's do it. Overall, for Ian, a fantastic episode 1, mixed bag for episode 2. I'm still really excited. I want to say my last really big positive thought. I am loving the score. Like, the score throughout this episode, I loved it. I think it's really modern. I think it's not like the regular Star Trek score we usually hear.
It feels really bright.
Bright and hip. I don't want to say hip because that's such an old man thing to say.
It's very,
but it feels like a very hip score.
If you've ever seen Wall-E and it's like his little building, like it's just a little engine that could kind of vibe.
I kind of love it. I think the environment feels very, very rich. They're not afraid to pepper in exocomps, which I love, and rock tacks. And I don't know, it already feels like a very developed environment, which perhaps shouldn't be surprising because Discovery established it and Star Trek was fully established before Discovery. But I think Academy is off to a strong start overall.
Overall pips, what do you think?
Oh yeah, 2.5, 4 episode 2.
I'm gonna go 3.
Fair. Maybe over time it'll be a 3, but that argument's gonna piss me off for a long time. So fucking contrived. That's not what people argue about. Anyway, hey, we've recorded these quasi back-to-back, so we haven't had the opportunity to get any emails from you because you won't know to email us about the show, but would love to hear your thoughts about Starfleet Academy, any corrections about stuff that we've missed, Beta Z eyes, hello. Send them to ian.danae@gmail.com and we'll get them read on the show and answer any questions that you might have. Just would love to hear your thoughts as well. Join the Discord, which is popping off talking about Starfleet Academy as well. All of that lovely stuff is in the description. And if you'd like to get an ad-free version of this show and get it a day early, go over to the Ian and Danae Patreon. And for $3 a month, which is less than a Arachta Geno, You can get free access and some other perks that we throw up there as well. We'll be back next week for Starfleet Academy, Episode 3, Vitus Reflux. We'll have predictions about that at the top of next week's episode.
That sounds like acid reflux.
It really does.
Great.
Life reflux?
I don't know.
Something like that. Until then, I'm Captain Ian, and you can never have enough misdemeanors in quantum physics from me.
And it's let the piggies out to pasture, if you know what I mean, from me.
Live long and prosper.
For listening to this episode of Captain's Pod. If you'd like to get in touch with the podcast, you can send us an email to ian@ianandene.com. And if you want to support the show and get the episodes early, you can go to our Patreon. That's patreon.com/ianandene. If you want to catch the show live, we have those links down in the description for YouTube and Twitch. And then I think I'm supposed to close this hailing frequency, so bloop bloop, we're out. Get the mic a little higher.
I literally just turned it on.
Huh?
I literally just turned it on. Oh, the song.
The song comes to mind because, of course, I'm having to lift my microphone up to the high heavens. So why? Can I get the mic a little higher?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, because I decided to remove the dingle doodle hanger that kept it aloft.
So how is it working now without all the elastic bands on it?
I'm pretty sure it's the Demon Hunters, man. Pretty sure it's some kind of like demonic intervention.
That's an oddly specific.
Oh, tell me your desire.
Mm-hmm. Sing it.
Watch me set the world on fire.
I'm in the wrong fucking prep sheet.
Tell me your desire. What?
I'm in the description, not the prep sheet.
You can describe what's happening. Actually, I'll do it. Welcome back to Captain's Pod, a comfy, cozy, grab a tea podcast where we discuss, in ASMR style, Star Trek.
Nope. What date did we record the other episode?
Yesterday date.
It wasn't yesterday.
Friday. Saturday.
I don't know that my star date system makes sense.
Saturday. I think, you know, you finally admitting that now is improvement. God forbid that makes it to the edit.
No, but that will.
Tired of juggling sales tools or spending hours on prospecting just to book a few meetings? Meet Apollo, the go-to-market platform for finding leads, connecting with buyers, and closing deals, all in one place. Apollo gives you access to over 210 million contacts and AI that handles all your busy work, finding leads, drafting emails, and even prioritizing your day. So stop paying for 5 different sales tools when one does it all. Visit apollo.io and sign up free today.